This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane. Hackers calling themselves Impact Team targeted the website for adulterers, Ashley Madison complaining about the company's business practices. They said Avid Life Media charged users money to have their personal information deleted from the site and then didn't scrub the data. The hackers released members' names, usernames, addresses, phone numbers, and profile information, calling them cheating dirtbags. We're talking about 37 million people. Later, we'll be talking about why people have affairs and what happens when they are found out. But first, we're joined by writer Jennifer Weiner. She wrote about the Ashley Madison users last week in the New York Times, a piece titled "The Ashley Madison Hack Shows We're Too Dumb to Cheat." Her most recent book is called "Who Do You Love?" And she's a contributing opinion writer for the New York Times, joining us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jennifer Weiner, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always a pleasure.
So why were you so outraged?
Well, okay. Without getting into the morality of infidelity and marital vows and hypocrisy, the thing that struck me was the city that had the largest number of Ashley Madison users was Washington. So I'm thinking, I voted for some of these people. Like, my tax dollars are paying their salaries, and they are too stupid to, like, not even come up with an email address that doesn't end in .gov. And it's like, you know, that just did not leave me feeling like super optimistic about our country.
Well, I realize you were at the end of a book tour and probably at your wits' end.
Yes,
anyway.
So nothing,
everything was bothering you.
No, it's a very dark lens that it throws over everything. But it's just like, really, people, like, it takes like 5 minutes and a couple security questions on Hotmail.com, and then you can be anonymous-ish, or, you know, at least not overtly, like, I am at my desk, and instead of processing your license application or tax form, you know, I am cruising for an affair. You know, it's like, even if that happens, I don't need to know.
Well, and apparently we all know because of this hack. And I was thinking about these hackers over the weekend. I mean, the fact that they apparently exposed information about some 35, 37 million people, and yet we don't know who they are.
Well, that's, I'm assuming, what's next. Is someone's going to hack the hackers, and we're going to find out, you know, every dirty secret in their closet. I mean, and I'm just hoping they have Gmail addresses. That's the it's the only thing keeping me alive at this point is just that one wish.
Do you understand Ashley Madison?
Well, I had a young explain it to me. I had one of the youth of today.
Is that what we call them now?
Well, there is a Twitter account called Youth Concierge, where if you're confused about something, like I was watching Bachelor in Paradise last night, and somebody's like, well, I was talking to her off the show. And I'm like, I don't think talking to her means talking to her. And indeed, it does not.
Ah.
It can mean anything from actual speech to casual hookups to, like, sex but not boyfriend and girlfriend.
So talking is a euphemism.
Talking
now.
Is a euphemism. Who knew? Now I do. But okay, what was the question? How does Ashley Madison work?
Yes.
Well,
did this young tell you?
I think it's just like anything else. I mean, you can go on Seamless and get food. You can go on Peapod and get groceries. You can go on Amazon and get anything. And now you can go on Ashley Madison and get an affair. That's, you know, I think you enter your data and you talk about what you would do and what you would not do and who you'd do it with and who you wouldn't do it with. And then I think there's different levels of service. You can sort of have your basic membership. You can pay extra for, you know, what I'm now calling the Josh Duggar level of service, where you're guaranteed to get somebody sent to your front door or grandmother's house in Arkansas. but yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's love for money.
Well, and it's interesting that I don't know if there is no privacy exactly, but that certainly privacy is much more amorphous and much more penetrable, if I can say that.
Much more penetrable, no pun intended. But I mean, I was thinking about the Sony hack, and I was thinking about Amy Pascal's Amazon orders, which were made public and quite gleefully sort of crowed over on feminist websites because she was ordering, you know, bikini wax and pubic hair dye and stuff like that. And it's like, felt icky. Like, that felt icky. And then I'm just like, okay, is it icky because she's a woman I'd like to respect, whereas one of the 19 kids and counting kids who worked for the Family Research Council, maybe not so much, so I want to laugh at him, but I feel sorry for her. And I don't know what the answer is, because it seems to be that basically everything you do, everything you buy, everyone you talk to, and everything you look at, you know, probably my 12-year-old on her iPhone could figure out at this point.
What do you make? I mean, there's a pushback, I think, now about the shaming, but there has been pretty intense shaming of all these people that have used this website. And we don't know why or why they're on the website, but nonetheless, a scarlet letter.
Well, here's the thing. I'd like to believe that we are shaming the hypocrites. Okay, like if somebody has come out very strongly and said, I am a moral man, I stand for the sanctity of marriage, and those gays are doing terrible things. And then it turns out that he's, you know, that Satan has built a fortress in his heart, as I think Josh said, and he's having affairs and he's looking at porn and he's molested young women, which is horrible. That's a problem. That's hypocrisy. But if you're just like a schmo and, you know, your wife doesn't understand you, what wife ever did, I don't know if I need to know that.
But apparently we can know
apparently
that
because we can.
This hack wasn't just for the hypocrites of Ashley
See,
Madison.
That's the thing. There's really no filtering app. Once you've got the 37 million names, there's really no way to filter by morality, basically. I mean, I guess, you know, they don't even register as Republicans or Democrats. You don't even know who's a social conservative. You don't know who's been stumping about fidelity when they've been doing this.
Right. And there's something sort of gleeful about, I guess,
there
the people.
There is. The pile on.
I mean, infidelity has its casualties. And obviously, for a lot of people, it is cheating on somebody.
But we don't know. For all we know, I mean, honestly, I doubt this is the case, but Josh Duggar's wife could have had an understanding and could have said, you know, seeing as how I'll be pregnant for the next 20 years, why don't you just go on and, you know, meet somebody nice in Arkansas? We don't know. And I think that I wish there was a pause button. I think everybody's talked about, you know, the internet should have a pause button. And I'm thinking in particular of the Gawker scandal, where there was a sex worker who'd been allegedly contacted by a Condé Nast executive looking for an assignation in what Gawker called a remote location, which was Chicago, which I thought was kind of funny. But it was sort of like, you know, and they sort of said, you know, anytime a center suite executive cheats on his wife, we will be there. And it's like, well, geez, Gawker, that's really not, you know, wherever there's a cop beating a guy kind of thing. And it's like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what his wife knew. We don't know what their understanding was. We don't even know if this was for real. We don't know if the disgruntled sex worker just faked the whole thing, which, again, I think my 12-year-old could probably do on her iPhone.
So a pause button. I mean, it seems like, I think for many of us, a pause button would be
glass
a good
houses,
thing. I was thinking
first
of those
stone,
glass houses.
You know, I think that, I mean, and I'll certainly speak for myself. I mean, I've bought stuff online that I would not be real thrilled if people found out about, or, you know, and I think we all have looked at something, purchased something, talked to someone, said something, done something. And we hope that there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, but boy, oh boy, not so much.
Certainly doesn't seem that way. But there is something about enjoying another person's humiliation, downfall. Even if we don't know who they are, we don't know if they're hypocrites.
Sure.
We just,
because it's not us, and maybe it could have been. You know, it's like we could have just as easily stepped on that very same banana peel and been lying in the gutter.
Well, I do need to ask you, only because your article or your piece in the New York Times is also about just what it's like to be on a book tour.
Yes,
and I guess,
yes.
I mean, on the one hand, not having a book tour and being ignored is one problem.
Exactly.
Having a book tour.
It's a high class problem. It's a first world problem. Yes. But no, I mean, you're going from city to city and you're seeing people in transit. Where they've sort of put their public faces away and are just sort of raw and undefended and in many cases horrible. I mean, I saw parents hit kids. I saw people sort of curse at flight attendants for asking them to check bags that were obviously not going to fit into the overhead compartment. I mean, I saw people flout the laws of the quiet car, which you just do not do. And it's like, I wonder, you know, my piece was sort of what's happening to America. You know, it's like I'm Andy Rooney minus the eyebrows. But it's like, really, what's going on with us? And does maybe the internet have something to do with it, you know, where we can behave so badly believing no one's watching that we forget how to behave when people are?
But the truth is people are watching and they're probably taking a picture or they're writing something in the Times
about it. So everyone be good always.
We're going to be playing an interview I did a number of years ago, actually, with the founder of Ashley Madison. And he, I mean, basically what he is saying is, I saw a need.
Mm-hmm.
I created a business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not judging these people.
And if it wasn't me, someone else would do it?
Well, something along that line. I mean, is there some truth to that?
Listen, I mean, I don't know how I'd feel going home for holiday dinners if my business involved me getting rich off infidelity and letting people do something that they probably should not be doing. But I mean, I think, you know, in a free marketplace, right. You know, no void goes unfilled, but bump. And someone was probably going to do that, you know? I think, like, as I was saying, in an age where you can order anything you want online, someone was going to come up with a way to order affairs.
Yeah, indeed. And someone has and apparently
did.
Made a lot of money
and a lot of
users as well. Are you in any way tempted to read those names, or have you looked at those
names?
I haven't looked.
I figure there are people whose job it is to look for me. And I mean, the names that I've seen were Josh Duggar and the head of the Louisiana Republican Party, I believe. Those are the only two sort of big names I've seen. But, you know, I guess it was funny because when I was researching the piece that I wrote for The New York Times, I Googled Ashley Madison hack, and it was sort of one news story followed by 10 increasingly desperate sounding links about here's what to say to your spouse if your name comes up. So it's like, you know, I think the business now is going to be somebody coming up with a website for I was just doing research for my novel, honey. Or, you know, I just wanted to see if our son/father/brother was on that. I had to sign up to, you know, or I was worried about your sister and I just wanted, you know, like, boy.
We are voyeurs, are we not?
We pretty much are. And it's human nature. And I don't know what the answer is except to just tell people to, you know, have affairs the old-fashioned way. Like, you know. Key parties, meet people in bars. I don't know. Hook up with the teachers at parents' night. What did people do in the 70s?
Well, we will be talking about that as well.
Yes.
And I have to say that even on the train this morning, I mean, I did turn my iPad a little bit, but in preparation for the show, I did go onto the Ashley Madison website just to kind of see what was going on there.
Yeah.
And Friday, the Radio Times producers putting this show together, also on the Ashley Madison website. I mean, it's there. It's that fingertip away.
I think it would be, I think if there was somebody I was really curious about and really wanted bad things to happen to, I'd maybe plug their name in and just see. But luckily, there's no one I'm feeling that way toward right now. Everything's good.
Well, Jennifer Weiner, thank you so much for joining
us
today on Radio
Times.
Always. And she is a contributing opinion writer for The New York Times and wrote a piece last week about the Ashley Madison hack. And her most recent book is titled, Who Do You Love? We're going to take a very short break, and then we will be talking about what happens when an affair is discovered, especially in such a public way. We have two guests who will be joining us, and you can join us as well. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. The hack of the website, AshleyMadison.com, looks like it's inspired more shaming than sympathy for its millions of users. The website's motto is Life is Short, Have an Affair. It's made a lot of money promoting infidelity. We've been talking about what the hack says about privacy, and I do want to talk about affairs and whether couples can recover when a partner cheats, especially when that behavior is made public, as in the case of the Ashley Madison hack. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Edward Monte. He's an individual and couples therapist at Centra. That's a multi multidisciplinary group, group practice in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Also teaches in the Graduate School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. Edward Monty, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
We always call you when we want to talk about affairs. Joining us by telephone is Justin Lehmiller. He's a social psychologist, also a sex researcher at Ball State University, author of the blog Sex and Psychology. And Justin Lehmiller, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me here.
You're very welcome. Edward, let me begin with you. You were sitting in as I was talking with Jen about her piece that was in the New York Times. How do you explain the kind of frenzy that seems to have been the reaction to this Ashley Madison hack?
Well, what a sexy topic. I mean, how exciting is this that we found out that, 34 million
something
people?
Like that.
And that's just the ones they hacked? So that what are our neighbors doing? And the excitement of, I'm not, they are. And, wow, am I better than them? Is this exciting? Now let's go down the list and find out who they are. And as Jen said, it's a couple very famous people, but for the most part, it is all the schmoes that she called them that are 34 million of them.
And what you're saying is if they're our neighbors, that means at least looking for an affair is a rather common,
very common
human endeavor.
Absolutely. Yes. It's the old lusting in the heart. I mean, the one thing I've never been clear on with that is because their name is there and they've gone on the site, does that mean they've had the affair? Mm-hmm. And I think the assumption is, of course, if you're on the site, you're having the affair. Well, not necessarily. You know, Carter said, lusting in the heart. Who are you looking at? How do you look at them? Who goes on dating sites just to go on dating sites just to see what's out there? It's not uncommon at all.
Let me turn to you, Justin. What do you make of, I guess, both the hack and the reaction to the hack?
Well, I think the hack is something that's a little bit concerning, especially the fact that people seem to be taking so much glee and joy in the fact that the cheaters are sort of getting what they deserve. I think we really should be concerned that this hack occurred in light of all of these other data hacks that have happened recently, because it suggests that there's a really big problem with our security of our information that's out there on the internet. So for me, my reaction to this is one more of concern about what's the next hack going to be, what information is that going to contain. So that's really one of the big things that I see as concerning. And I think Edward also makes a really good point that just because people were listed on the site doesn't mean that they actually had an affair. People could have been going on for a wide range of reasons. For some people, maybe it was just curiosity. For some people, it may have been sort of a form of pornography for them, where they just kind of enjoyed the thrill of maybe just going on there, maybe chatting with other people, but not actually going through with it. So that's one thing we need to be really careful about, is making a distinction between having a profile and actually committing infidelity.
Well, Justin, let me go back to you. As you said, you have some concerns about the fact that it was hacked at all. What I find interesting is that the hackers, this group that calls themselves Impact Team, started out targeting Ashley Madison, saying basically they weren't doing what they said they were doing and charging people to delete information from their site, and then they didn't do it. But then they kind of pivoted and then took information there, published it, and called these people cheating dirtbags.
Right. There's something really interesting going on there. And I should first say I'm not a fan of Ashley Madison in any way, but I don't think that the people who signed up for this website are necessarily getting what they deserve. And I think it's really concerning that the hackers wanted to essentially blackmail Ashley Madison, extort them, threaten to shut down their website. They wanted them to shut down their website, otherwise they'd release the information. So that's certainly a very bad pattern of behavior that we don't want to see repeated, where people are stealing information and then blackmailing and extorting others. But in this case, with regard to the cheaters and sort of the motivation here, it is really interesting what's happened and what this has ultimately evolved and turned into with this sort of public shaming. But again, get back to the idea that we need to be very careful about this distinction between having a profile and actually committing infidelity.
Sure. And Ed, we're going back to you. As you said, what this reveals is that, you know, our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues are at least interested in this. But do we call them cheating dirtbags?
Well, but that's the whole thing. If you have, 10,000 perverts in a corner, you could sit back and go, look at them, isn't that sad? the stat you said, which we keep reading, is 34 million. What is this revealing? It's revealing that people are into porn, are into looking on the internet, using the internet for social and sexual connection. Is this normative? There's 34 million people.
So it is.
How normal is this? Evidently, it is the new normal. And is that making them all dirtbags? Well, we can talk about that.
Well, and when Jennifer was talking about, you know, outing hypocrites, I mean, people
right.
That's
the fun part.
Well, that is the fun part. But one doesn't think that there are 30 million hypocrites.
There can't be
here.
34 million hypocrites, for God's sakes. And, right. and it's like, okay, so what are these people doing? I mean, the standard line is, do good people have affairs? Do good people, are they sexual? Are they hidden in a sexual way? And are they not us? In the righteousness of the hackers is a righteousness of people who say, well, I would never do that. I'd love to know how many of the hackers' names are in there.
But are you saying, or let me toss that back to you, do good people have affairs?
Absolutely. 34 million, are they all evil mm-hmm. perverts and narcissists and sociopaths? No. They're neighbors. They're friends. They're good people who, how do we describe it, make bad decisions, make good decisions perhaps, given their circumstances? But it does open the whole notion of what are affairs, and are they only evil-based? Are they only destructive? Are they only bad? Answer mostly is yes, but what comes from them?
Yeah. Justin, I want to read something. Dan Savage, he's a sex advice columnist, and he said, there are a lot of people out there who have good cause to cheat, men and women trapped in sexless marriages, men and women trapped in loveless marriages, men and women who have essentially been abandoned sexually and or emotionally by spouses. They aren't in a position to leave either because their spouses are economically dependent on them or vice versa, or because they may have children who are dependent on both partners. I mean, I think what he's saying there is that there are just a myriad of complicated right. reasons why people do what they do. Can you add to that?
Right. And I don't know that I would use the phrase good cause to cheat, because I don't think cheating is necessarily a good idea. But he's absolutely right that there are a wide range of factors that might lead someone to commit infidelity. Sometimes it has to do with the relationship, which is what he was kind of hinting at there, where maybe they're not having the desired amount of sex. And in fact, if you look at national survey data, about 1 in 7 Americans report that they're in a sexless marriage. So this is certainly very, very common, but sometimes mm-hmm. it's not just you're not having any sex. Maybe you're still having sex, but it's not as satisfying as you'd like it to be. I've also seen data showing that women who fake orgasms more often are more likely to cheat. So if you're not satisfied, you may be more likely to commit infidelity. But it's not just sexual right. needs. There are also emotional needs. If you aren't feeling loved, desired, or emotionally connected, you might cheat. There are also personality factors. Some people have sensation-seeking tendencies where they just prefer very thrilling and risky activities. Some people have midlife crises. For example, this is really interesting. Some data I've seen shows that when people are on the verge of entering a new decade in life, they're at an age that ends in a 9, they're more likely to cheat because they're sort of looking back on and reflecting on their life and what they have and haven't accomplished. And that can lead people to act mm-hmm. out in all sorts of ways if they feel that they're inadequate. So cheating is very, very complex.
You know, Edward, I'm also thinking of the other side of the coin with this release of all this information. You're also releasing information about people who didn't go to Ashley Madison, but
Absolutely.
They are living with someone that does. So
right.
they get kind of drawn into the humiliation.
Well, they get drawn in, but also their relationship gets drawn in, because all of this is assuming that we have one person is unhappy and the other one is blissfully happy. And usually what you've done is you've blown the cover. When there's an affair and they come to see me as a couples therapist, what we have to deal with is what's going on between them. It's not just the bad behavior, which God knows it is, and bad judgment, because it complicates things. But there could be, you know, as Justin said, maybe not a good reason to have an affair, but certainly there is a reason. I don't know if it's logical always, mm-hmm. but there's an emotional reason. But it really does blow the cover on the whole relationship. And people on both sides have to begin looking at what it is. As Justin said, if you look at developmental life cycle stages and you have every decade, well, the statistic that I always look at is end of marriages, the amount of divorce there is, and compare that to career change.
Oh.
And the idea, if you decided to be a dentist at 20 and you decided to marry him, Are you sure you still want to be a dentist at 45 and you still want to be married to him? That do you, in fact, outgrow? Would this be the person you would choose? Which is why long-term marriages are, or relationships are so difficult, because you have to account for change of a person over the life cycle. So even there, people make bad decisions not to negotiate that, not to stay focused. I think a lot of affairs come out of pure neglect of the relationship.
Ah.
So they become workers and parents, and they don't inconvenience the children. They don't inconvenience their work. And the relationships just die on the vine. Affairs are very quick, easy ways to feel passionate, alive, excited. But oftentimes they're done by people who love their partner. I think we always assume that if you have an affair, you don't love who you're with. Well, not necessarily.
I mean, you might be bored. You
might be
bored. Other things.
Right. But you're not – I think it's interesting that if you think about an affair, particularly people that would go to Ashley Madison, and we're saying affairs tend to be shorter, it's not a replacement necessarily. If you say, well, why didn't you just leave him or her and go with your new partner? And very few relationships that start when the primary relationship is in place ever make it. So what is it? It's a diversion, but it's not often meant to replace.
That's Edward Monty, who joins us along with Justin Lehmiller, and we are talking about the hack of the AshleyMadison.com website. It is a website for those people that want to have affairs. That's how they promote themselves. And if you want to join the conversation, we're talking about both the hacking of the site, but also the fact that it's revealed how many people are at least interested in having an affair, more common perhaps than many of us have thought. To join the conversation, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Justin, if I can go back to you and picking up on what Edward was just talking about, because oftentimes it seems that couples where there is an affair, they need some zone of privacy or a place, a quiet place where they can try to deal with whatever is going on in the relationship. But this is such a public hack with the potential of release of all this private information. One wonders whether they're going to have a space to deal with this.
Right. It's affairs, no matter how they come out, are very, very challenging, very tough to deal with. And in the initial aftermath, there's a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, depression, just a wide range of negative emotions. And so when you add on all of this public scrutiny, it adds a whole other level to it that can make it very, very challenging to deal with. And it may also, in some ways, create more pressure on people. For example, if you want to use the term victim of infidelity, to be to leave or exit the relationship. People may judge them if they decide to stay and say, well, how could you possibly stay in a relationship with someone who cheated on you? So it creates this whole other set of concerns that people have when they're trying to deal with this very, very tough, traumatic, and stressful incident.
When there are people outside of the relationship judging it and saying this is what you should do.
Right. And if you look at the fact that men have more affairs than women, and then women are told not to be victims and how dare you put up with it, and that the only stance you need to take is it's non-negotiable, it's unforgivable, and you have to move on. When in face of it is, a therapist of 40 years watching couple after couple come through, now a very select population, they've come to therapy. So of those, the vast majority stay together.
They do.
And the vast majority can work it out. Now, it's cross-culturally. There's different, who does it in which ethnic group. But for the most part, people can weather it. But there's a great deal of shaming, particularly of women who decide to stay. Hillary Clinton. Think of that. I mean, it was like, well, why doesn't she leave? Well, really? There's a lot going on here that you want to think about. And we don't know the complexities of those relationships.
How do you begin that repair process? Let's assume the couple wants to stay together.
Well, there's that initial piece where, as Justin rightly said, the victim of the one who did not act out, they may both be culpable of neglecting their relationship. The moment the affair is had, the person who had the affair is 100% responsible for that behavior. They now get to be punished for it. They now have to not disappear for any period of time. They have to turn over their phone. They have to do whatever they have to do to begin building trust. So the first phase really is just a meltdown, lots of anger, lots of demands. And the person who has been guilty has to have a payback. There's a debt there. There's an emotional debt. Once that ends.
I mean, be punished.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you don't show up 20 minutes late and not explain where you are. You call if you're, you know, all the things you didn't do. You start taking out the garbage. You start talking. Sex gets better. Talking gets better. People start working on the relationship that they hadn't. Beyond that, it really is going back to what happened 4 seconds before the affair started. What led up to this? And then for the person who did it, why did you do it? The one who didn't do it, why didn't you do it? What have you been doing? You both must have been unhappy. And if they're responsible, they can work through it.
Justin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think Edward makes a lot of good points there. And it is absolutely true that most people who are in relationships where an affair is discovered do stay together. But most of the people who stay together aren't as happy in the end. The relationship is never quite the same. It's really a small percentage of people who experience what we call post-traumatic growth, where they really grow from and extend and improve their relationship in some way after the affair is discovered. And the only way that that happens is if the person who was cheated on can come to forgive their partner and start to trust them again. To the extent that that happens, the partners can ultimately become closer, they can develop better communication, and improve their relationship in other ways. But that's kind of the exception rather than the rule, and I think a big part of the reason for that is because a lot of people in these relationships don't seek help. A therapy can really provide a lot of help for couples who are dealing with trying to cope with affairs, because it's just a very tough issue to deal with on your own.
And it's hard to forgive. It sounds like that's what you're saying as well, Justin.
Absolutely. It's very difficult to forgive in these cases because affairs are such an issue that people have so many emotional reactions to. They feel so strongly, so passionately about them, and so it can make it difficult to have the kind of prolonged conversations, irrational conversations that you need to have about this in order to move on and get past it.
Go ahead, Edward. Almost up on a break here.
Okay, and just very quickly, Justin, I thought it was a good point. What I want to say to you is that the idea that it will never be the same, I think that's a great point, that it's not that they leave and they're forgiven, they're all happy and they go away and it's forgotten. It's never the same again. And in some ways, the reality is now present, and the fantasy of what we had magically that we didn't have to work on, that's gone. Now we have to work every day to be intimate.
And that's Edward Monte. He's a therapist here in the Philadelphia area at Centra. That's a multidisciplinary group practice in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Teaches in the Graduate School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us, Justin Lehmiller. He's a social psychologist, also a sex researcher at Ball State University, author of the blog Sex and Psychology. We are talking about Ashley Madison in this very in this hour of Radio Times. An email from Gary says, life may be short, but I can tell you this, if I had an affair, my wife would make it a whole lot shorter. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. I also want to play a clip from an interview I did with the founder of Ashley Madison. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Justin Lehmiller and Edward Monte about the hack of AshleyMadison.com. Also talking about why people have affairs and if and how couples can recover from an affair. I do want to play an interview I did with Ashley Madison founder Noel Biederman. This goes back to July 23rd, 2009, an excerpt of that interview.
Do you feel guilty about your site?
No, it's not a guilt factor, right? I don't believe that I'm going to convince anybody in a 30-second TV spot or a 60-second radio spot or with a catchy catchphrase that they're going to go and have an affair. They have an affair for the most part because their life isn't working for them, and they're looking to, you know, find some, you know, fill some void in their relationship. And so what I've told these people through our service is don't have that workplace affair and risk losing, you know, your job. Don't go on a single dating site and meet an unsuspecting single. That could also end badly, and surely don't break the law and go visit an escort. So what I understand is it's part of the human condition. Infidelity has been around a lot longer than, you know, Ashley Madison. And so what I'm doing is cannibalizing an existing human behavior and putting it in an environment where I think it's, you know, more safe and secure for those people willing to engage in it.
Well, you are an enabler, though.
Well, I don't know. Is the hotel room that you meet in, are they enablers?
Well, they're not advertising necessarily.
I think people call me that because I market my service, but I'm trying to let them know that it exists, but I don't know that it's necessarily enabling.
Would you, though, want your parents to use your site or your wife or your best friend to use your site?
No, I understand where you're coming from, but I guess I'm not in the moral judgment space. I know it's easy to look at an affair from the outside and assume that the person who is committing adultery is the person in the wrong, but unless you understand what goes on in their private lives, you can't really come to that conclusion. I know that the 20 million Americans currently in sexless marriages, probably the vast majority didn't sign up to be in sexless marriages and find themselves inexplicably in that position right now. They might seek counseling, they might try communicating, they might try to overcome it, and they still may find that it just... They're frustrated that they're not able to do so. So I don't know that it's easy to judge people. I don't know that I want to sit back there and say, you know, this is wrong and this is right. I think that's an oversimplification.
But because there is so much privacy and anonymity, I mean, how would you, for instance, how would you know that your wife isn't using your site, Ashley Madison?
I wouldn't. People ask me all the time, what celebrities are on there, what athletes, what are, I wouldn't know who uses my service. It is a totally anonymous service. It's discreet. I don't know who uses it. What I do know is that in my relationship, if I found out that my wife was cheating on me, I surely wouldn't blame an inanimate object. I wouldn't even blame the person she was with. I would take a look in the mirror. I would probably figure out, how did I miss this? How did I fail in our relationship that she needed to go and do this? And I think that's what it comes down to. It's about accountability. If you want to succeed in your relationship, you have to put in a lot of work.
And that's Noel Biederman, the founder of AshleyMadison.com, going back to an interview I did 6 years ago, July 23rd, 2009. Interestingly, Edward Monty was a guest on that show at that time. But he's a businessman.
He
sees an opportunity. He doesn't judge.
No, he doesn't. I mean, we laughed that, you know, at the time. He presents very much as the Mother Teresa of affairs. I mean, he's really providing this amazing service.
I don't know if you can do that.
We should all be so thankful for his good works. And it's sort of disconcerting that at the end he sort of says exactly what I just said. So, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Your thoughts, Justin, then we'll get to some callers.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating interview. The service that he's offering is something that really isn't going to help any relationships. It really is kind of enabling people to go out and engage in what is ultimately, for the most part, very destructive behavior. So I think what we really need to be having a conversation about is what can we do to improve our relationships in a way that's going to make people less likely to go out and seek affairs in the first place.
And would that, I mean, since you said it, Justin, how can we do that?
Well, I think there are two really important things. One is to establish really good communication in your relationship. Unfortunately, in America, we find it much easier to have sex than to talk about it, even with our own partners. And what happens over the course of a relationship, and Edward hinted at this earlier, is that our sexual needs, our desires can change over time. And unless you have very good communication, you're not going to know that and be able to keep up with it. So it's important to have those open lines of communication. The other thing is to try and keep passion alive in your relationship. It's really when your relationship becomes stale, dull, and routine that affairs are likely to set in. What happens is that when people try to keep the passion alive, some of that passion can kind of transfer over onto their partner. So if you're going out and engaging in new, exciting, and novel activities with your partner, it keeps life fresh, exciting, and that excitement transfers over onto how you feel about your partner. So communicate and go out and seek novel activities is what I would recommend.
How about for you, Edward?
Well, I totally agree with Justin. I think there's another step, which is, do you believe that communication, do you believe that hard work is necessary? I think most of us confuse intimate moments for intimacy. Intimacy is hard work over a long period of time. That doesn't sound too sexy. But it's very different than the person you meet on the plane who thinks you're attractive and in 2 minutes you're telling your life story and there's an intimate moment. So that people begin to feel badly that the intimate moments have gone away. And as I said before, I think neglect of the relationship. Over the years of seeing thousands and thousands of affairs, there's one commonality for the most part. There are exceptions, but the commonality is we haven't spent 10 minutes together. I often say to couples, when you describe your life and the last time you went to dinner and didn't talk about work or the kids, or even went to dinner, last time you went on a vacation, last time you just walked down the street together, I wouldn't even consider you dating. I mean, you two are just wonderful partners, which most of them are. You raise good kids. You're hardworking. You're not a couple. You know, you haven't been a couple. So really to wave the marriage flag and go, because we're married, well, let's worry more about are we a couple than are we married.
Let me get, looks like, Avir to join us. Avir from Center City, Philadelphia. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I just had a quick question, comment. And I'm thinking from a biological perspective. And when you have 34 million people doing something, that's about one-tenth of the U.S. population. And like when that great of a number of people are doing something, can it really be considered abnormal behavior? Or, like, is the assumption that monogamy is normal for humans, could that be wrong? Like, is it proven to be pathological that, like, people want to engage in other relationships? Or is it the, like, is it the promiscuity that's bad? Or is it the fact that we have an expectation on human nature that we're, as a society, constantly breaking? Is that what's causing the destruction in society?
Those are great questions. I'm going to toss that first to you, Justin. Is monogamy sort of abnormal?
Well, two things I have to say. One is that when you're looking at the total number of Ashley Madison profiles, that's worldwide. That's not just in the U.S. So I don't know exactly what the breakdown is for U.S. versus other countries. But to get to the question about monogamy, is it natural? Different scientists have argued different things. Some have argued that we're evolutionarily evolved to be monogamous because it's adaptive for raising children. Others have argued that we're evolved to be non-monogamous because it helps us to spread our genes on to future generations more easily. So scientists are really kind of split on that. What I tend to see in the data and in the world is that monogamy works very well for some people. Some people have no problem maintaining fidelity in the course of a long-term relationship, but for other people, it really does seem to go against their nature. And so maybe what we need to do is allow people to kind of choose the relationship path that's right for them rather than taking one relationship ideal and forcing it and imposing it on everyone.
And let them kind of work it out for themselves, you're saying, Justin?
Right. Negotiate your own rules and boundaries to your own comfort level. About the studies I've seen show that about 5% of Americans in online samples who are in relationships report that they're in some type of consensually non-monogamous relationship where they negotiate those rules and boundaries. And for them, those relationships can work out very well.
Go ahead.
Sure. No, there's just insane. There's many models. I think, though, that the culture gives us these weird conflicting models. One is we're supposed to be young and sexy and everyone on TV is having sex and it's so much fun, and if you don't do that, you're sort of dead. And then on the other side, that we should be in these long-term monogamous relationships that somehow magically work just because we love each other. The one stat that I love is people have been married longer now than ever in history because people have the good sense of dying at 40, so we're only together about 15 years.
Right.
And now people are finding them stuck in a relationship for 40, 50 years that, again, they chose when they were 20. Now, if you don't work on it, as Justin and I are both saying, if you don't work on it, what do you have? It should be an alive organism. It's not just something stale that you put in a box. So it's really very difficult to be monogamous for that long without a lot of work.
We have a Facebook comment from Josephine. Besides a great discussion, thanks, Josephine. She says, it took many years for me to understand that there are reasons not to tell your friends that their partner is cheating, i.e. they know but are now being humiliated even worse.
Right, exactly. Well, that the interesting thing with other couples therapists, and Justin, I'd be interested to know if this happens for you, is what it's done, the hacking, is it's brought up this question that is always there, which is, if you're having an affair, should you tell?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sort of trained morally of course you should tell. And then the more I'm in it, it's like, okay, to what benefit are we sharing that? You know, someone will come in and say, if they're racked and they can't be in an intimate relationship because they cheated on their husband the second day they met them, okay. But for the most part, really, we have to go back and say in 1984 for 2 days, I had sex with someone I met on a plane. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's very cloudy. Is it the good thing to not hurt, or is it the good thing to be honest? And it's sort of a toss-up, and other therapists and people I talk to are still saying that. Here, they haven't left them any opportunity to choose.
Exactly, because they have been outed.
They've
Justin,
been outed.
Any thoughts about that before we get back to our callers?
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really tough. I mean, I generally try and be a proponent of open and honest communication, and I can totally understand Edward's point about if this is something that happened really long ago, is there benefit to bringing it up? That's a really, really tough question to answer, and I don't know that I can weigh in on that in a short amount of time.
Fair enough. No, I appreciate that. Let me get Kevin from Cape May Courthouse to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I've been married for 2.5 years and been in a relationship with my wife for 12. And about 8 years ago, I talked to someone who interested me, and my relationship wasn't going well, and so I left my relationship and started a short relationship with this woman. And then my wife and I got back together. I've been faithful ever since, but she cannot let it go. Any suggestions on how I can get we can get through this difficulty in our marriage?
Well, let me toss to our local therapist here, Edward Monte.
You said knows about affairs earlier, like
exactly.
Personally, no. I think it's like anything with an adult. It's the question of this has been going on for many years that you're back together. It should be moving forward. I think, as Justin rightly said, it will never be the same. I don't know if she's ever going to fully trust you. Let's say that and hold on to it. I think that's really good. However, what is not so good is that you're sitting there in emotional debt to her and you're asking us what to do. That question has to go to her. Uh-huh. You have to turn to her and say, look, it has now been 8 years. You still don't trust me. What do you need to trust me? Because she can't sit there saying you're in debt to me. And you go, well, what do I owe you? And she goes, I'm not telling you, but you're in debt to me. An adult can't do that. Now, she may not know, and that's where therapy comes in. But this is a long time to be sitting there saying, you owe me. She's getting something out of that, as are you. The two of you need to go talk about it, but start with her.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you're both living in sort of this captive relationship mm-hmm. where neither of you are happy and can move on. And so I think Edward's right that this might be a case where seeking therapy and outside help could really help to try and move on. But it's possible that in some of these cases, there may not be a way to move on because the one partner can't forgive the other. And in those cases, it's hard to say whether it's really worth continuing to stay in this sort of state of limbo forever.
Go ahead, Edward.
There's one piece there, too, is the I don't know how to do it. It's her joy of having something over your partner. And after, you know, not your relationships, or I'm certainly not going to talk about that, but just I've seen so many couples where years later, there's great glee in being the righteous victim. And if the relationship is now stuck with a righteous victim and someone who feels oppressed by their bad behavior, what sort of relationship is this?
Let me get one more caller in. Looks like we have a lot of people that want to talk to us. We have Eileen from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Eileen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You're directed more towards Dr. Monte. As a society, why are we so afraid to talk about our sexual needs and desires? Does that create more problems for us if we hide these things? And I would love to hang up and listen.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Well, I think that it's a wonderful question that Eileen says. It's if 34 million people on one site, now we're only talking about one site, everyone. There's 12 sites, and that's internationally. So maybe there's 34 million in the U.S. on all the sites. What are we really talking about here? We're talking about sort of the what everyone wants to see is the underbelly of human behavior when, in fact, it's the sexuality and the needs and the complexity of relationships that we just don't talk about. I would agree that I think most affairs happen because, as Justin said, people don't talk. Mm. So when one says, gee, the postman is looking really attractive, you should be saying that to your partner because it's signifying there's something wrong. And people don't want to hurt their partner. Or they don't want to sort of be beaten up by it. So they keep it to themselves. It festers. And the next thing you know, you're sleeping with the postman.
Justin, we're almost out of time here. Any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, and I think that this lack of communication that we've been talking about is something that can lead to affairs, but it can also lead to a wide range of other problems in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Lack of communication is one of the key contributors to a lot of different sexual problems, difficulty with desire, arousal, orgasm, and so forth. So it's really, really important to establish that open sense of communication with your partner, and also, like I said, to keep the passion alive in your relationship to try and prevent this desire or need to want to cheat in the future.
Well, we do have to end on that note. We could go on. My thanks to both of you. Justin Lee Miller, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. It was a pleasure.
And he's a social psychologist, sex researcher at Ball State University, author of the blog Sex and Psychology. Edward Monte, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times as well. Founder and clinical director of Centra, also teaches couples therapy as an instructor in the Graduate School of Social Psychology and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about the program, including how to download a
podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, how to follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Artie Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.